Welcome to IA, the good, the bad, the ugly, where we dissect, discuss, and debate police conduct because what police do or fail to do matters. It affects each of us. I'm Garrett Davidson.
And I'm Atif Williams. Join us as we use our extensive police internal investigation experiences and training to educate, entertain, and empower both police and citizens. It's our desire for each of us to be good and be safe.
On today's episode, we delve into Zipgate.
Zipgate?
Yeah, the zipper herd around the Metro Nashville Police Department.
Is this story safe for work, man?
Yeah, so everyone can turn up the volume because they're going to want to hear this one. So the MMPD completed their rollout of body-worn cameras in 2021. They were intended to provide accountability and trust with the public. But what happens when officers don't want you to see what they are doing?
Probably nothing good.
Exactly. And this one all started with an anonymous complaint about a vehicle crash involving a possible DUI driver. When the Metro Nashville Police Department's Office of Professional Accountability got this one, they had no idea just how bad it would be.
All right, man. You got me. I got to hear this. Please remember to like, subscribe, and comment below to help our show. So, when did Metro fully roll out body-worn and in-car cameras?
So, it was around the middle of 2021, and they were in place for this incident.
Did they really make a difference in the investigation?
Yeah, they were actually critical. I can remember when this one came in, it was through Hub Nashville. And for those of you who don't already know, Hub Nashville is an online dashboard or portal for reporting concerns or issues to the Metro Nashville Government of Tennessee. In this case, it was an anonymous complaint against officers. And I saw this one and thought, oh, great, another DUI we didn't handle right. We had a string of DUI investigations, which is a story in of itself. Now, this one quickly set itself apart from those others. So just a reminder, as is our practice, we have changed the names of those involved in this story. So for those of you who don't already know, I served as lieutenant over the Office of Professional Accountability there at the Metro Nashville Police Department from October 1st, 2021, until I took my retirement. So back on October 11th, 2021, around 8:08 p.m., I received an email from Hub Nashville with an anonymous complaint that two officers did not arrest a DUI driver involved in a crash. I would receive these complaints from time to time, and then I'd forward them to a detective working desk duty to ensure that they received a prompt investigation. So that email read, and I quote, on 10-10-21, officers Dell and Grant from South Precinct responded to a crash where a driver was impaired and did not investigate or arrest the impaired driver. End quote. So I forwarded this to the detective working desk duty. He happened to be a sergeant doing his training rotation with OPA. I didn't think anything of this until our team's trainer asked if I had a moment to watch the body-worn camera footage. He didn't say anything other than that and that he'd like to get my thoughts. He didn't say, hey, this is bad or this is good. Nothing. So I sit down and they give me a tiny bit of context. Said a call for service was called in at 18:49 hours on October 10th, 2021. There was an off-duty Tennessee Highway Patrol officer who's in that area helping to direct traffic around the crash scene. A white Toyota Camry and a black Toyota Tundra were involved. The call was initially coded as a crash with injuries, but it was later changed to just a property damage crash. No injuries. It was around the area of Pinhook Road and Hobson Pike. So I'm sitting there watching it, and my detectives roll the footage. Officer Dell arrives on scene first and begins to collect information from those involved. He talks to the drivers and gets their statements, but he quickly runs into difficulty with the second driver. That driver appears initially to be at fault because he struck the other vehicle from behind. There's a language barrier as he speaks very little English, and he's showing indicators of impairment, presumably from alcohol. So when Officer Grant arrives, both he and Dell begin discussing the crash and what to do next. Dell asks Grant to speak with the second driver and see if he appears to be impaired. So Grant does so, walks up to him, begins interacting, and walks away from the interaction believing that, yeah, he was DUI. Another observation the officers made was that there were some Modelo beer bottles next to the truck, which appeared to be recently tossed out. So Grant walks back to his patrol vehicle, sits down, and begins looking for assistance with working the DUI. Both Grant and Dale talk at his car window, and neither feels confident in working the crash. They check on the talk around channel and the car radio to see if there's another officer available to respond and work the DUI. So they check on their main air as well, and even send a text message to another officer who often works DUIs. Nobody is available to help. But they never checked with a sergeant. So during this, Grant ends up pulling out a folder, which you can see on his camera footage as containing information for working DUIs. So information about performing the standardized field sobriety task. Now this folder is full of all that information as a quick reference, because you know DUIs are very complex, and officers often joke that they are litigated more heavily than homicides. It's unfortunately common that officers get training scars and anxiety from working DUIs. There's just so much that can get wrong and be turned over in court. It gives officers a lot of stress, and DUI attorneys will waste no effort in picking apart these cases. So this can lead to officers avoiding working DUIs, even if that means letting the offender go rather than making the arrest. And this is such a shame, in my opinion, when you look at the stats on the number of innocent lives lost each year in crashes in which alcohol was a factor. So now, as you watch the officers working, it becomes clear at this point that neither officer feels confident in working the DUI at all. By this point, a veteran officer would have just escorted the possible DUI driver to location, administered SFSTs, and if they refused, just articulated the probable cause for the arrest or for no arrest and moved on from there accordingly. And just as a reminder for our audience members in other parts of the country, other than Tennessee, remember that DUI investigative steps may vary based on your jurisdiction and the agency conducting it. Here within the Metro National Police Department, there is no preliminary toxilizer, for example. So Grant is trying to mentally ready himself to work the DUI. And it's apparent that he is not looking forward to it. And during this, Dale walks over and starts talking again. He eventually says that he is just going to take care of it. He then walks over to the alleged DUI driver. So Grant files all his paperwork back, puts his materials away, exits the vehicle, and then catches up to Dale. Dale is talking to the other driver and passenger, and he's addressing them. And he begins pointing to the passenger who was there in the vehicle with the DUI driver and tells him, "So you were driving, right?" The passenger looks confused. He shakes his head and points to the driver. But Dale continues with this, using his hands to motion as he does so. And he again states, "Hey, the passenger was the driver," as if looking for them to just both agree with his statement. During this, Grant is nearby standing and watching. So Dale at one point brings up questions about immigration status, and he says this in a way that implies a threat or risk of deportation, which MMPD officers have nothing to do with. Dale eventually gets on the phone and calls the language line to see if he can get a translator. They go back and forth, talk with the driver and passenger, and this really doesn't progress anywhere to help with what Dale is trying to accomplish. Now, another vehicle arrives, and this man is determined to be the nephew of the alleged DUI driver. Dale, in his apparent frustration with the DUI driver and his passenger, that they aren't just going along with him, leaves that interaction and walks over to the nephew, begins to talk to him. Grant walks up to the suspected DUI driver and his passenger, and at this point, the officers are like 30 feet apart from each other, talking to their citizens separately. So Grant's now with the DUI driver and the passenger. Dale's with the nephew of the DUI driver. Dale's talking to the nephew and sets the context about his uncle's situation. He goes on to explain in a roundabout way that if his uncle was just a passenger, then he would not be DUI. He begins soliciting the nephew's help to see if he would convince his uncle. However, the nephew's unwilling or unable to do this. During this interaction, Grant is over there, picking up from where Dale had left off. And let me stop and emphasize that at this point, it is apparent that none of the citizens are comfortable with the interactions. Their body language is that of being taken aback, confused, and just not trusting these officers and what they're trying to do. But this did not stop the officers. By this point, it has become increasingly clear that both Grant and Dell are trying to convince the driver and passenger to state they were in different seats. Here's why.
So basically, you're telling me that the suspects aren't picking up where the officers are laying down.
Exactly. So if the passenger, you know, if he was the one who was actually the driver and he's not intoxicated, obviously then you can say, well, there was a sober driver. There's no DUI driver. Of course, this would result in the passenger then being listed at fault for the crash. And it is unclear whether the passenger had a valid driver's license. But if he was willing to take it for the team, he could save his buddy from being arrested. Now, if the driver, who was intoxicated, was listed as the passenger, then it doesn't matter that he was intoxicated. It's not against the law to be a drunk passenger if the driver's sober. So this would mean that officers would have no DUI to investigate. However, they wanted to obtain verbal statements from the pair so they could sanitize their investigation and make it appear that everything was above board. The problem is that the alleged DUI driver and his passenger were being honest. And this is when things take a turn for the worse. So Grant eventually becomes frustrated too in trying to persuade them in his roundabout way, so he wants to become more blunt with them. The next thing you see on his body-worn camera is he reaches down to his vest, grabs his zipper, and zips it closed over the body-worn camera so that the camera can see nothing. Now, this is the infamous zip. For those of you wondering, yeah, departmental policy forbids intentionally covering or obstructing or manipulating your cameras to prevent them from recording something. You can imagine all the reasons for this, like this present incident. Now, there has to be a legitimate reason to not record something, and policy provides limited circumstances for this. And obviously, this was not one of those. Zipping up the camera in this incident was an obvious sign that the officer believed what he was doing was wrong. Now, even though the body-worn camera was covered by clothing and a bit muffled, you can still hear some of the conversation. Finally, Grant takes things even further and unzips his vest a bit and actually turns his camera off. And that ends his recording of the whole incident. Now, not long after that, Dell also turns off his body-worn camera before the incident is finished. The cameras are supposed to stay on until the incident is completely resolved and finished and officers are leaving the scene.
Wow. So those officers go through all that interaction, knowing that it's recorded, and then turn off their cameras anyway?
Yeah, I know, right? I think that's part of why it's so surprising and perhaps absurd. It was surprising to see what they were doing in the first place, and then to see them think that turning off their cameras would somehow protect them. The body-worn camera made it clear that there were issues beyond not working a DUI. There were fundamental issues related to the integrity of these officers and whether they could be trusted to perform their jobs any longer. The footage made it clear that a full investigation was needed, so a series of interviews would be conducted. And this included the two accused officers, and you won't believe how different their statements were. So during the course of the investigation, detectives were able to get the nephew to come in and give a statement. A Spanish-speaking detective was able to assist with the interview. And you know, it can be difficult to get citizens who are witnesses to come in and give a statement to the police.
Yeah, it's a difficult spot to be in, talking to the police about something potentially bad that the police have done. It's hard to convince them that as internal affairs, we are after just the facts. No matter how unpleasant or where they lead us, they just see us as the police. What's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong.
Exactly. So the nephew agrees to talk, and by the end of the interview, detectives are sure that the nephew understood the officers as trying to get his uncle and passenger to state they were in different seats so that the uncle would not be arrested for DUI. And the nephew felt this was wrong. Officers also brought in a sergeant with extensive experience with DUI investigations to be an expert witness for DUIs. And he was able to confirm details regarding the training provided to those newer officers. By the end of the interview, detectives were able to confirm that a DUI investigation should have been completely initiated and performed on that alleged DUI driver, and the accused officers had received the proper training to know and do so. So all that remained for this investigation was to interview the two accused officers. Now, their deputy chief had already expressed significant concern about the alleged conduct, and the officers were decommissioned pending the outcome of the investigation. Now, this meant they were not working in a sworn officer capacity. This is done to protect the public, the department, and even the officers from any further misconduct. It's not uncommon for the MMPD to do this with serious allegations involving integrity. Officers are still in a paid status, but it stops future on-duty misconduct, and it gives the department the time it needs to do a thorough investigation. So we were very concerned about the potential for these officers to collude and get their stories together. We didn't want to interview one of these officers, and then as soon as they left, they could call up the other officer and tell them what to say. So because of this, we scheduled the officers' interviews back to back.
That's a bit unusual. Ordinarily, you'd want time between interviews to take new information from one interview and use it for the subsequent ones. It is a potential risky move because it means you have less time to take into account new facts gathered from the old interview. You are operating on the fly in that situation.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So we weighed the options and determined it was the best strategy for this case. That's one of the things I was so proud about with the team I had. There was a constant striving to improve things and get to the truth of matters as best we could. And that is absolutely important for public trust. And I'll add the obvious. Yes, officers could talk before the interview, but things can change once you sit across from that IA detective. That's when it gets real. So with that investigative strategy made, we interviewed the officers back to back on the same day. So the first officer who detectives interviewed was Grant. And once the interview starts, he's actually very forthcoming about what took place. He explains how the call for service unfolded, and this includes how he determined early on that the second driver was probably DUI. He and Dale agreed, and it was also clear that neither felt comfortable working the DUI. So it was important to get his version and perspective of events and all this. And Grant is nearby when Dale starts talking to the alleged DUI driver and his passenger, and he sees and hears the passenger say, "No, I'm not the driver. He's the driver." So Grant, at this point, starts to get panicky about the situation because he didn't know what they were going to do. Neither officer planned to work the DUI. Dale wasn't going to do it because he didn't know how, and Grant doesn't either. So Grant starts making hand gestures while talking to the driver and the passenger, and he begins to explain how the driver could get arrested. He then tells the passenger that he was the driver. And Grant admits at this point that he was trying to get it so the passenger would say that he was the driver. And he wasn't doing it, so I zipped up my traffic vest. That's his words. Now, detectives continue to break the events down with Grant during the interview. And Grant admits that Dale didn't really do anything to convince him to join in on getting the two vehicle occupants to swap with the other location in the vehicle. Grant just saw that was what Dale was doing. And when Dale walks away to talk to the nephew, Grant simply picked up where Dale left off. According to Grant, he and Dale never got together and colluded by saying, "Hey, we're going to get them to say this." Grant just saw what Dale was doing and jumped in to support him. Now, another issue in this case is that Grant completed the crash report for the incident. However, the crash report did not document the presence of alcohol because, obviously, he didn't want to report there being a DUI driver. Additionally, the cause of the crash was attributed to cell phone usage or driver distraction rather than the alcohol. This amounted to falsifying a police report. This means that information being placed on a Tennessee uniform crash report was that alcohol was not a factor. Official documentation was falsified. So by the end of the interview, Grant admits the following. He attempted to get the passenger to say he was the driver. He attempted to get the nephew to convince the passenger he was the driver. He obscured his body-worn camera from recording. He turned his camera off before the call was ended. He failed to report the alcohol presence or usage on the crash report. He falsified the cell phone usage on the report. But Grant was honest in his interview, and what he said reflected exactly everything that was plainly apparent from watching the body-worn cameras on scene. So he lacked integrity on the street, but then he owned it in the interview room. He was apologetic, and we could visibly see that he was broken and sorry for how he failed. And we believed him. In a way, he slightly redeemed himself and earned some respect back, but this could not change what he did on the street. So after Grant's interview, detectives immediately interviewed Dell. Now, Dell's interview quickly starts off in a whole different direction. It's apparent early on that Dell has a whole different story to tell. He's more defensive, and he makes it harder for detectives to actually get information out of him. In addition to the efforts to swap who was the driver, detectives also wanted to know more about what information Dell shared with Grant for the crash report completion. The efforts to get the driver and passenger to pick up the beer bottle trash, which would be evidence of the DUI, as well as part of the conversation where it sounded like he was threatening the citizens with possible deportation if they did not cooperate. Now, Officer Dell denies ever trying to get the passenger to be the driver. Instead, he continually frames his conversation and efforts with the passenger and driver as just trying to clear up his initial confusion about who was driving. For Officer Dell, this confusion arose while speaking on the language line. Everything that followed was just an effort to clarify who actually drove, and he was adamant he did not try to get the passenger to swap roles with the driver. So during the interview, detectives are so convinced that Dell was lying about what he was trying to do, they even reminded him again of the honesty and truthfulness policy. And despite all this, Dell stuck to his guns and maintained that he did not try to convince the passenger that he was the driver. He persisted that he only was trying to clarify details. So by the end of Officer Dell's interview, he denies the following: that he tried to convince the passenger that he was the driver, that he tried to convince the nephew to convince the uncle that he was the driver, that he tried to get the driver and occupants to pick up the beer bottle trash, or that he threatened immigration status if they did not cooperate. Detectives, at that point, determined that Officer Dell had lied during his interview, unlike Grant, who took responsibility and admitted to everything.
Talking about a difference of night and day.
Yeah. When we finished Grant's interview, we actually felt some renewed respect for him. He was beaten down and he knew he messed up. He was remorseful. That is the kind of person you, in some ways, wish you could keep. They seem redeemable. But Dell, on the other hand, was sticking to a story that only he and his attorney believed. He wasn't about to abandon that sinking ship. But hey, I guess playing devil's advocate, if someone is telling the truth, they are going to stick to that story too, right?
So how was this case resolved?
Yeah, so OPA sustained both Grant and Dell on multiple policy violations. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, that sustained is like a guilty verdict in court, but it is the language used in the internal administrative investigations for the MMPD. It's also what we call substantiated. Substantiated meaning the allegation was found to have merit or be true. So both officers were sustained on violations of adherence to law related to the tampering with or fabricating of evidence, for deficient or inefficient performance of duties, for false or inaccurate reports, and for stating the reasons for stopping their body-worn camera recording. So they also each had separate unique charges. Grant had a sustained charge for the prohibited act of turning off his body-worn camera to prevent the recording of a policy violation. That also incorporates attempting to intentionally obstruct or manipulate it. Dell had a sustained charge for the honesty and truthfulness for his lies during the interview. The charges for honesty and truthfulness, body-worn camera prohibited acts, tampering with or falsifying evidence, and false or inaccurate reports were all sanctioned with dismissal, aka termination. The charges for deficient or inefficient performance duties were 10-day suspensions, and then not stating the reasons for the body-worn camera deactivation were 2-day.
So they each catch 3 counts of dismissal and 12 days of suspension.
Yes. So obviously, with the multiple counts of termination being offered, the suspension time is mostly irrelevant, but MMPD provides sanctions for each violation, no matter what else is on the table. And in the end, both officers resigned from the department. Every good story has its morals, right? Its lessons learned. So what did we learn here?
Better do what's right, even if you might make mistakes in the process. Had these officers just accepted this and tried their best with the DUI, sure, maybe the case would have been tossed out. They would still have their jobs and could get additional training to improve their DUI skills going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all of us officers have been in a situation before where we worried about how well we could handle something. But we see in this case that some decisions will result in you losing your job, respect from your fellow professionals, and it even jeopardizes your personal life. These officers hadn't been on but for a few years, and they had so much of a career ahead of them. I bet they never imagined their career ending like this. But when they did these kind of fundamental ethical violations, there was no way the MMPD could risk keeping them employed.
Absolutely. Think about these citizens, too. Imagine being in their shoes, having an officer who could arrest you, standing there and trying to manipulate your statements and facts, and also implying things about your immigration status. The whole thing is rotten to its core. This kind of behavior destroys trust with citizens we've sworn an oath to serve and protect. No matter if the citizen is a suspect in a crime or not, officers have to act with integrity.
Yeah, you're right. It's a non-negotiable. So if you're in the audience and you're an officer, just do what the majority of officers do, and that's do what's right. If you're a citizen, if you believe you witnessed misconduct, you can report that. I can't imagine being a citizen in a situation like this, having an officer trying to manipulate you, and even if it seems like that they are trying to supposedly help you, it would have to be nerve-wracking. I mean, what else might they do? And the fact that they are doing this gives you a reason to not trust them. As always, whether you're an officer or citizen, just be good and be safe. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we want to hear from you. Tell us what you think. Comment or join the conversation. You can join us on Twitter. Comment below on YouTube, wherever you happen to be. Did anything else stand out to you on this episode? Would you like an episode where we walk through the actual interviews and footage together? Any lingering questions or concerns? Let us know. Until next time, be good and be safe.